Part 1. Leaving the USA, September 1965. I had butterflies in my stomach as we waved goodbye to our parents in California. It was early September, and we were off. For the next 2 weeks, we rumbled along in mixed truck on a road trip to New York. I had rarely been in a pickup truck, and I had never slept in one. But I loved rolling out our blankets and sleeping cozily in the open-air bed of the truck. We had already sent our luggage ahead to New York City by Greyhound bus, so we were traveling light. I felt adventurous and free. We traveled leisurely, with no specific itinerary, visiting friends along the way. One thing I really wanted to do was go to Carlsbad Caverns in New Mexico. Mick seemed happy driving to the caverns, but he didn't want to go in. Why? I wondered. It seemed so exciting to me. I wanted us to do it together. He told me to go on alone, and I did, reluctantly. I can still remember my exhilaration in seeing the vastness of the rooms and feeling the welcoming coolness as I walked deeper into the cave. But I missed being able to share the experience of seeing the huge stalactites and stalagmites with Mick. I didn't fully understand his feelings until many years later when he told me that he was claustrophobic. Then it made sense. Though we differed in our desire to explore caves, we were both shocked as we drove right through a hurricane that was roaring into New Orleans. Winds howled around us at 80 miles an hour as we dashed into a boarded-up hotel. Later, the winds reached 150 miles an hour, and I read that Hurricane Betsy caused more damage in that area than any hurricane had since 1929. That night, I stayed awake, peering through the window, aghast at watching metal signs being torn from buildings and sent tumbling down the street, rooftops being hurled to the ground, glass breaking everywhere. I'd never seen such a thing. In my journal, I wrote, "I was scared to death. Mick managed to sleep a good part of that night. I don't know how." I knew that he was as frightened as I was, but I was beginning to realize that although we might share similar feelings, we didn't always respond in the same way. As I look back on this hurricane experience, what astonishes me is how relatively little information was available about weather forecasts. The first U.S. weather satellite was launched in 1960, but it was many years before people could regularly receive national and international forecasts from newspapers or TV. When I was growing up in San Luis Obispo, California, in the 1940s and 50s, I thought of weather as something that was only happening over the skies of my own town. I had no images in my mind of the ubiquitous swirls of gathering storms over the earth that we now see in the media. When we arrived in New York City on September 16, 1965, I donned my new red and white checked wash-and-wear dress, low black pumps, and nylons. Mick put on his jacket and tie. He carried my small green suitcase as we walked up the gangplank of the SS Rotterdam, bound for Europe. It took 8 days to cross the Atlantic. 8 days! We did not think of this as a cruise. It was just a common way to travel to Europe. At the time, it didn't occur to me to fly. Our days on shipboard passed slowly and comfortably. We ate, we slept, we talked to fellow travelers, we played shuffleboard, we ate again, we slept again. It was hard to tell the difference between night and day, especially since our tiny room had no porthole. Life was easy, all our needs were taken care of, and I loved it. I didn't think much about what would be coming up. I didn't worry about our next steps. My mood changed immediately when we disembarked in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. Suddenly, no one was taking care of us anymore. We entered the vast arrival room of Central Station. People were hurrying here and there. I was overwhelmed. Mick said he would get the train tickets to Heidelberg, Germany, while I stayed with our luggage. Luckily, we didn't have much with us, since we had sent most of our bags to a storage facility in France. I waited, perched uncomfortably on the edge of our large suitcase, and I waited more. Finally, Mick came back empty-handed.